Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today we're jumping into, well, the really complex world of security. How we protect everything, really. Digital, physical. We've got a stack of notes here covering a lot of ground. Security architecture, crypto, physical stuff.
Yeah, it's quite a collection. And our mission, I guess, is to pull out the essentials from all this.
Find the connections.
Exactly. See how these maybe seemingly separate things, architecture, crypto, locks on doors, actually fit together. Find the core ideas. Hopefully uncover some useful takeaways for you.
Okay, let's do it. Starting big picture. Security architecture. The notes say it's about protecting individual components. Hardware, software, firmware.
Right, the building blocks.
But it's not just about securing each piece in isolation, is it? It gets bigger.
Oh, definitely. It scales right up. That's where enterprise security architecture comes in. Think of it like the master plan for security across the entire organization.
So it's structuring the whole operation securely.
Precisely. Not just patching holes later. It's fundamental design.
And good design needs principles. Defense in depth. That one jumps out. Multiple layers.
Yeah. Classic concept. Think medieval castle.
Okay.
You've got outer walls, maybe a moat, inner walls, guards. If attackers breach one layer,
they still have more to deal with.
Right. In cyber terms, that means firewalls, maybe intrusion detection systems, encryption, access controls, different tools. So if one control fails, the whole system isn't wide open.
But the nodes add a nuance there, right? The layers need to work together.
Critically important. Just piling on layers without thought can actually create complexity. And complexity can, well, sometimes hide new vulnerabilities. It needs to be smart layering.
Right. Smart layering. Not just more layers. Okay. Another principle. Secure defaults.
Systems should be secure out of the box. You shouldn't have to immediately start tightening screws just to get basic protection. Minimize those easy mistakes.
And fail securely. I like the example in the notes.
The door lock one. Right. Power goes out. The secure door stays locked. It defaults to its secure state. So even when things go wrong, the system prioritizes protection.
That makes a lot of sense. Then separation of duties.
Another classic. Don't give one person all the keys to the kingdom.
Prevents mistakes and bad actors.
Both. Dividing critical tasks means you have checks and balances. Harder for one person to mess up badly, accidentally, or, you know, deliberately.
And the last one here, keep it simple and small.
Yeah.
KISS.
Always good advice. Complex systems are just harder to understand fully.
And harder to secure if you don't understand them.
Exactly. Simpler designs mean fewer places for things to break, fewer potential attack points, and they're usually easier to fix when something does go wrong.
Okay. Now, shifting gears slightly. Zero trust. This term is everywhere now.
It really is. And the core idea, trust nothing, verify everything, is such a departure.
From the old, trust but verify.
Yeah. In today's world, cloud everywhere, third parties accessing systems, porous network perimeters, you just can't implicitly trust anything anymore, inside or outside your network. Zero trust says, always verify, continuously, every user, every device, every access attempt.
It's not no trust then, it's earned trust.
That's a good way to put it. It's about never assuming trust, always explicitly confirming it, even for things already inside. And a key part of making zero trust work is, well, know your architecture. You absolutely have to understand what you're trying to protect.
Makes sense. You can't verify if you don't know what's what. Okay, so moving from broad strategy, what about building security in from the absolute beginning? Privacy by design.
Right. PBD. This isn't about adding privacy features later as a patch. It's weaving it in from the concept stage throughout the whole life cycle.
The notes list seven principles. Things like privacy as the default setting.
Default privacy, full functionality shouldn't require sacrificing privacy, transparency, respecting user privacy all the way through. It's proactive, not reactive. Fix it before it's broken.
Good philosophy. Okay, can't talk security without talking threats. The notes mention the attack lifecycle. Reconnaissance first. Sounds like spying.
Pretty much. It's the information gathering phase. Attackers are poking around, scanning websites, maybe looking for email formats, employee names, network info, trying to understand the target.
Like checking for open doors and windows before trying to break in.
Exactly. And the key insight here, detecting this recon early. That can be your first warning sign. A chance to block an attack before it really starts.
And after recon comes,
weaponization.
Building the attack tool.
Yep. Taking the info they gathered and creating the payload. Maybe it's malware tailored to a vulnerability they found. Maybe it's a phishing email. It's crafting the weapon.
Which brings us back to security and architecture. It's not just the perimeter wall.
No, definitely not. It's securing the individual pieces within the walls based on what they do and what risks they face. That leads to the weakest link idea.
Your whole system is only as strong as the weakest part.
Precisely. And because you can't protect everything equally, resources are finite, you need a value-driven approach. Focus your best defenses on your most critical assets, what really matters if it gets compromised.
Okay. Now, for people trying to structure all this, there are established ways, frameworks, and models. The notes mention Zachman, CBSA, TOGAF for enterprise security architecture.
Right. These are like blueprints or methodologies for building that enterprise-wide security plan.
Right.
Zachman is kind of a classification system, helps organize different views of the architecture. Static.
Okay.
CBSA is more risk-driven, designed to be adaptable, scalable.
Mm-hmm.
TOGAF is often used by large organizations, focuses on efficiency in managing IT resources, though it can be complex. Think of them as different toolkits for architects.
And below the frameworks, we get specific security models. These sound more formal, like mathematical definitions of security policy.
They are. They provide the theoretical underpinnings, state machine models, for example. Mm-hmm. The idea is the system can only ever transition from one secure state to another secure state.
And Bell Lapidule is a key example there. For confidentiality.
The classic one. Famous for no read-up, you can't read info classified higher than your level, and no write-down. You can't write info down to a lower classification level. Very big in military and government settings. Layers of classification.
The notes also mention information flow and non-interference models.
Information flow tracks how data moves and trying to prevent leaks to unauthorized places. Non-interference is about ensuring that what happens in one security domain, say top secret, can't influence or be observed by a lower domain like unclassified, keeping things separate.
Then lattice-based models. Sounds hierarchical.
It is. Both Bell Lapidule and Biba use this concept. A lattice defines the different security levels and the allowed flow between them. Bell Lapidule, as we said, is confidentiality. Biba is the integrity counterpart focused on preventing improper modification of data.
And rule-based models. Oh. Clark Wilson and Brewer Nash are mentioned.
These use specific rules to mediate access. Clark Wilson is heavily focused on data integrity in commercial settings. It's about preventing unauthorized or improper authorized changes, maintaining consistency.
Right, preventing harmful authorized changes. That's interesting.
Yeah, it uses things like well-formed transactions, breaking tasks into safe steps and separation of duties. Also, the access triple subject, program, object. You don't access data directly, only through a trusted program.
Like ensuring data changes follow a strict approved process.
Exactly. And Brewer Nash, the other one mentioned, that's the Chinese wall model.
Ah, for conflicts of interest.
Precisely. If you're a consultant and you access data for company A, the wall goes up and you can't access data for company B, their competitor. It dynamically changes access based on what you've seen. Stops conflicts.
Going back to Bell Lapidule, no read-up, no write-down. Simple rules, big impact.
Absolutely. The simple security property, no read-up, keeps lower clearance folks from seeing higher secrets. The star property, no write-down, stops higher clearance folks from leaking secrets downwards. And the strong star property is even stricter, only read-write at your own level.
Okay, this next one sounds a bit sneaky. Covert channels.
They are sneaky. They're communication paths that weren't intended for communication, bypassing normal security controls.
How do they work?
Two main types. Storage channels, maybe a process leaves some sensitive data behind in shared memory, and another process reads it later. Or timing channels, manipulating the timing of events to signal information. The notes mention the pizza index idea. Maybe how fast an order is processed subtly leaks data.
Wow. Yeah, they're hard to spot.
Very, because they're using legitimate system functions in unintended ways. Big challenge for confidentiality.
And just to reiterate on Clark Wilson, its main focus is really that data integrity piece.
Yes, keeping data accurate, consistent, preventing unauthorized or improper changes. That's its core goal.
Then we have HRU and Graham Denning models. These seem focused on managing the permissions themselves.
That's right. HRU Harrison Rizzo Ullman is about the integrity of access rights, managing who can grant or revoke permissions. It allows dynamic changes, like the example of HR giving managers read access. Graham Denning focuses more on securely creating and deleting subjects, like users, and objects, like files.
Okay, lots of models. But how do we know if any of this stuff is actually working? Evaluation and assurance, certification versus accreditation. What's the difference there?
Good question. Certification is the technical deep dive. Does the system meet the security specs? Is it built correctly? It's the technical check.
And accreditation.
That's the management sign-off. Management looks at the certification report, considers the risks in the specific environment where it will be used, and formally accepts that risk. Yes, we agree this is secure enough for us to use for this purpose.
Got it. Technical check versus management acceptance. Now, standards for evaluation. TCSEC, the Orange Book. Sounds old.
It is. Foundational, but focus heavily on confidentiality and standalone systems. Doesn't really map well to today's network world. ITSEC came later, European standard, looked at functionality and assurance a bit broader.
And the current standard is Common Criteria, ISO 15408.
Yes, that's the globally recognized one now. It uses evaluation assurance levels, EALs. EAL1 is basic, EAL7 is incredibly rigorous formal verification.
So a higher EAL means more confidence.
Generally, yes. It means the product went through deeper, more expensive testing and analysis, useful for comparing products.
Okay. And alongside evaluation criteria, there are security control frameworks. These sound more like practical guides.
Exactly. Things like ISO 27001 and 27002, NIST-SP 853, COBIT, the CIS controls, PCI DSS for payment cards. These give you catalogs of security controls and best practices, how to actually implement security.
They help you choose what protections to put in place.
Mm-hmm. They provide structure for building and managing your security program.
And then there are the mandatory ones, regulatory frameworks, SOX, HICMBA, FISMA, FedRAMP.
Right. These are driven by law. SOX for financial reporting integrity, IPAE for healthcare data privacy and security, FISMA and FedRAMP for U.S. federal government systems. Compliance isn't optional here. It's legally required.
Okay. Shifting into a core technology, cryptography and security architecture. It's about secret messages, but it's way more fundamental than just hiding text, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Crypto underpins so much. Confidentiality, yes, but also integrity proving data hasn't been tampered with and authentication proving who you are. It's vital.
The nodes cover the main types. Symmetric.
One key for locking and unlocking. Fast, good for bulk data. Think AES, DES, historically.
Asymmetric.
Two keys, public and private. Solves key sharing problems. Good for signatures, key exchange. Think RSA, ECC.
And hybrid.
Using both. Use asymmetric to securely swap a symmetric key, then use that fast symmetric key for the actual data. Best of both worlds. Used all over, like in TLS for websites. Protects data at rest, in transit, even sometimes during use.
The notes dip into some real low-level stuff, too. CPU cycle, fetch, decode, execute, store.
Mm-hmm.
And process isolation, how does that relate?
Understanding the CPU cycle helps see where maybe timing attacks or other low-level exploits could occur. Process isolation is crucial security. Things like memory segmentation, giving each process its own protected memory space or time division. Multiplexing quickly switching CPU time between processes stops one bad program from crashing or spying on others. It's fundamental OS security.
And storage types.
Right.
Primary, RAM, cache versus secondary,
yeah.
Hard drives, SSDs, volatile versus non-volatile.
Right. Primary is fast, but forgets when power's off. Secondary is slower, but remembers. Important for data remnants, what data might be left behind, and forensics.
System kernel, ring protection model.
Well,
sounds like the OS's inner sanctum.
It is. The kernel, ring zero, is the most privileged part, managing everything. User apps run in ring three, least privileged. The hardware enforces these rings. Stops a regular program from, say, directly messing with hardware or other processes' memory. Protects the core system.
Middleware. Abstraction. Simplifying complexity.
Middleware connects different applications, like Glue. Think a mobile banking app talking to the bank's mainframe. Abstraction hides complexity, like driving a car without needing to know engine mechanics. Both useful, but you need to ensure these layers themselves are secure and don't introduce new risks.
And trusted platform modules, TPMs, hardware security.
Yep, a dedicated chip on the motherboard for crypto stuff. Securely generates and stores keys, ties them to that specific hardware, can verify system integrity before booting. It's a hardware root of trust, independent of the main OS. Very useful.
Okay, moving to operational security. Bypass controls.
Yeah.
Necessary evils.
Sometimes. You might need a way to bypass a security control in an emergency or for maintenance, but they're inherently risky.
How do you manage that risk?
Strong physical security around the bypass mechanism, definitely segregation of duties. One person shouldn't be able to just flip the switch and meticulous logging and monitoring of any use.
TCOU, time of check, time of use. Sounds subtle.
It is. A race condition. You check if something is okay, like file permissions,
yeah.
But then before you use it, an attacker changes it. The gap between checking and using is the vulnerability window.
Emanations, signals leaking from devices, tempest.
Yeah, electronic gear gives off faint electromagnetic signals. Theoretically, someone could capture these and reconstruct data. Tempest is the standard for shielding equipment to prevent this eavesdropping, mostly a concern in high-security government military areas.
Hardening. Just basic good practice, right? Locking things down.
Absolutely fundamental. Reducing the attack surface, remove software you don't need, disable unused services, patch religiously, configure strong authentication, secure defaults, make the system as tough a target as possible.
Mobile devices. Huge convenience, huge risk. Loss, theft.
They're everywhere, holding tons of data. MDM Mobile Device Management and MAM Mobile Application Management are key. They let organizations enforce policies, wipe lost devices, control apps. You need clear BYOD policies if employees use personal devices. Plus VPNs, strong authentication like 2FA, maybe app whitelisting.
And OWASP has a mobile top 10 list, like for web apps.
They do. Highlights the most common and dangerous mobile app flaws. Things like storing data insecurely on the device, using credentials improperly, essential reading for mobile developers.
Grid computing, using lots of computers together. Security issues.
Yeah, you're distributing work, often across machines you don't fully control. So data integrity is a concern. And resource misuse, the notes mentioned SETI at home, but also folks using grid resources illicitly, like mining crypto. You need strong authentication and monitoring.
Data warehouses, big data. Inference and aggregation sound like privacy risks.
They are. Inference is deducing sensitive stuff from non-sensitive bits. Aggregation is combining lots of anonymized or separate data points to potentially re-identify people or reveal private details.
How do you fight that?
Strong access controls, data masking or anonymization techniques, encryption where possible, and really careful monitoring of how the data is being queried and used.
Industrial control systems, ICS. Critical infrastructure, often old tech.
That's a major vulnerability. SCADA systems, PLCs, they might run critical processes but be based on old, unpatchable operating systems. Protection often involves air gapping, physically isolating them from business or public networks, plus strict segmentation, zoning, logging, monitoring, and very careful planned patching when possible.
Cloud computing changed everything. But security shared, right? What are the key things?
Broad network access, resource pooling, rapid elasticity. Those are cloud characteristics. Service models matter, IO, SaaS, PaaS, so SaaS, because they dictate who is responsible for what security layer. Deployment models too, public, private, hybrid, community. And always data protection, privacy, encryption, access control, meeting regulations like GDPR or SHERA.
And the tech stack in the cloud. Hypervisors, VMs, containers, faces.
Each layer needs security focus. The hypervisor that manages VMs is critical. VMs provide good isolation. Containers are lighter but need careful security configuration. Face, serverless, shifts more responsibility to the provider, but you still own your code's security. Using hardened VM images helps too.
Managing identity in the cloud. Identity providers, federation, IDS.
Crucial. You need ways to manage who gets access. Identity providers, IDPs, handle authentication. Mm. Federation, using SingML OAuth, lets users log in once to access multiple services. IDEAS provides cloud-based identity management solutions. Consistency is key.
Benefits of cloud. Cost, flexibility, security benefits too.
Can be. Centralized management, access to advanced security tools maybe you couldn't afford on-prem, often better physical security and disaster recovery from the provider. But you have to do your due diligence on the provider and manage your part of the shared responsibility model correctly. It's not automatic security.
Edge computing.
Right.
Processing closer to the source. Mm. Security challenges.
Yeah, reduces latency but increases the attack surface. Many more devices out there at the edge. Securing those devices, the data on them, and the communication back is key. Understanding ingress, inbound traffic, and egress, outbound traffic at the edge, and peering, direct connections between networks, becomes vital.
Which leads to SaaS Secure Access Service Edge. Sounds like a modern approach for distributed users.
It is. Combines network security functions, firewall, secure web gateway, zero trust access with WAN capabilities, all delivered from the cloud. Designed for today's world where users and apps are everywhere, supports remote work securely.
Okay, let's nail down some specific web and database threats. XSS cross-site scripting. Stay a big problem.
Persists, yeah. Absolutely. Stored XSS injects script into the site, hits future visitors. Reflected XSS tricks a user into clicking a link that runs script in their browser. DOM-based manipulates the site's code on the client side.
Prevention.
Rigorous input validation and output encoding are key. Sanitizing anything users provide. Web application firewalls, WAFs, can also help filter malicious requests.
CSRF cross-site request forgery. tricking users into doing things.
Right. Leverages the user's logged in session. Attacker crafts a malicious request, tricks the victim into submitting it unknowingly, maybe clicking a link, loading an image. The site thinks the user meant to do it.
How do you stop that?
Anti-CSRF tokens are the standard defense. Unique, unpredictable tokens embedded in forms that the server checks on submission.
And SQL injection, attacking the database directly via web input.
Classic, still dangerous. Attacker puts SQL commands into input fields like search boxes or login forms. If the application isn't careful, it executes that malicious SQL against the database.
Letting them steal data, modify it.
Or even delete it, depending on permissions. Prevention is crucial. Again, validate all input, but most importantly, use prepared statements, parameterized queries. These separate the SQL command logic from the user data, so the data can't be misinterpreted as code. Knowing basic SQL helps understand the threat. Create, select, insert, update, delete, drop. Those are the commands attackers misuse.
Okay, deep breath. Now into the nitty-gritty of cryptography itself. Work factor. IVs nonces. Confusion diffusion.
Core concepts. Work factor is how much effort it takes to break the crypto. Higher is better. Four EVs, initialization vectors, and nonces add randomness. So encrypting the same message twice doesn't produce the same ciphertext. Crucial. Confusion obscures the link between the key and the ciphertext. Diffusion spreads, changes, alter one input bit, and many output bits change. The avalanche effect is strong diffusion.
Different types of ciphers mentioned. Substitution, transposition, synchronous versus asynchronous, frequency analysis weakness.
Yeah, basic historical ciphers like simple substitution swap letters or transposition rearrange letters are weak. Frequency analysis looking at how often letters appear breaks simple substitution easily. Polyalphabetic ciphers like Visionaire use multiple alphabets to resist that. Running key uses a long keyword. One-time pads are theoretically perfect if the key is truly random, used once, and as long as the message. Huge practical issues, though. Synchronous asynchronous relates to how the key stream is generated.
Symmetric key crypto again. DES, old. 3DS, better but slow. AES, the standard. AES 256 strong. Modes of operation, ECB, CBC, CTR. And the big challenge. Out-of-band key distribution.
Symmetric is fast, great for bulk encryption. AES is the workhorse now. Different modes like ECB, CBC offer trade-offs in how blocks are encrypted, affecting security and parallel processing. But yeah, getting that shared secret key to everyone securely, that's the Achilles heel. Physically meeting, secure courier, often impractical.
Which asymmetric crypto solves?
Yeah.
Public-private keys, RSA, ECC, digital signatures, certificates, non-repudiation, based on hard math problems, factoring, discrete logarithms, ECC, shorter keys for same strength.
Exactly. Asymmetric solves key exchange. Distribute your public key freely, keep the private key secret, enable signatures, sign with private, verify with public, proving authenticity and non-repudiation. You can't deny sending it. Relies on problems hard for computers to solve quickly. ECC is more efficient, giving similar security to RSA, but with smaller keys, good for mobile-constrained devices.
So signatures prove who sent it. How about keeping the message secret with asymmetric?
You encrypt the message with the recipient's public key. Only they have the corresponding private key to decrypt it. Confidentiality.
Other hard math problems. Knapsack. Prime numbers for RSA.
Knapsack was an early idea for public key crypto, but many versions were broken. Prime numbers are absolutely fundamental to RSA. The difficulty of factoring the product of two large primes is its security basis.
Quantum key distribution, QKD, future stuff, detects eavesdropping. NIST post-quantum crypto work.
QKD uses quantum physics properties. Trying to observe the key exchange inherently disturbs it, alerting the parties. Theoretically secure key exchange. Still experimental, range limitations, etc. NIST is preparing for quantum computers potentially breaking current crypto by developing new post-quantum algorithms resistant to them. Proactive work.
Diffie-Hellman. Just for key exchange, right? Not encryption itself.
Correct. Diffie-Hellman lets two parties agree on a shared secret, a symmetric key, over an insecure channel using discrete logarithms. It's a key exchange protocol widely used.
And hybrid crypto using both symmetric and asymmetric together, like SSL-TLS.
The standard approach for things like HTTPS. Use asymmetric, like RSA or DHECC, to securely establish a shared symmetric key, like AES, then use the faster symmetric crypto for encrypting the actual web traffic. Best of both worlds.
Hashing algorithms, MD5, SHA1, SHA2, SHA3, fixed length fingerprints for integrity, one-way collision resistant, birthday attack.
Yep. Hash functions create a digest of data, Changes to the data change the hash. Verifying integrity should be one way. Hard to get data back from hash. Deterministic, same input, same hash. And collision resistant, hard to find two inputs with the same hash. MD5 and SHA-1 have known collision weaknesses. Don't use them for security. SHA-2 and SHA-3 are current standards. The birthday tax shows finding any collision is easier than finding one for a specific input.
Digital certificates, the internet's ID cards, binding public keys to identities, CAs, root of trust, lifecycle.
Exactly. Certificates tie a public key to an entity, person, server, issued by trusted certificate authorities, CAs. The root CAs form the base of the trust chain, often kept offline for security. Certificates have a life, enrollment, issuance, validation, checking if still valid, not revoked, and eventually revocation or expiry. Essential for PKI, public key infrastructure.
CephIE for secure email uses PKI too.
Secure multi-purpose internet mail extensions adds digital signatures and encryption to standard email. Authentication, integrity, confidentiality, non-repudiation needs certificates and a PKI to work.
Okay, cryptanalytic attacks trying to break the crypto. Brute force, ciphertext only. Known chosen plaintext, chosen ciphertext.
Different attack scenarios. Brute force tries every possible key. Ciphertext only just has the encrypted message. Known plaintext has some corresponding plaintext ciphertext pairs. Chosen plaintext lets the attacker encrypt messages of their choice. Chosen ciphertext lets them decrypt messages of their choice, except the target one. The more power the attacker has, the easier it might be.
Other attacks. Linear differential. Factoring RSA. Implementation attacks. Side channels.
Linear and differential are advanced mathematical attacks on block ciphers. Factoring attacks target RSA's math directly. Implementation attacks are often easier, exploiting flaws in how the crypto is used, not the algorithm itself. WEP's weak IVs were a classic example. Side channel attacks look at things around the crypto power usage, timing differences, electromagnetic radiation to leak key information. Fault injection tries to induce errors to reveal secrets.
And non-cryptographic attacks, social engineering, pass the hash.
Often the easiest path. Trick people, social engineering, steal password hashes instead of cracking them, pass the hash, look in temporary files, exploit software bugs unrelated to the crypto. Attackers take the path of least resistance.
Phew. Okay, last major section. Physical security, protecting the tangible stuff. Starts with human safety first.
Absolutely paramount. Security measures should never compromise safety. Think clear, usable emergency exits. Then you do a security or site survey, figure out the threats, what you need to protect, the facility's layout and weaknesses.
CPT crime prevention through environmental design, using design to deter crime.
Right. Natural access control, guiding people with paths, landscaping, natural surveillance, making areas visible, territorial reinforcement, clear boundaries between public-private space. Smart design can passively enhance security.
Perimeter controls, fences, gates, bollards, landscaping, fewer entry points, better, CCTV. PIR sensors, lighting.
Define the boundary, control access. Fewer controlled entry points are easier to secure. Landscaping can channel movement, limit hiding spots. CCTV needs careful placement, good quality, and awareness of privacy laws. PIR detects motion via heat signature, need recalibration in hot places. Good lighting deters intruders, helps cameras.
Door security, material strength matters. Man traps.
Doors are key entry points. Strong materials obviously help. Man traps are excellent access control and interlocking door system. Often needs two-factor auth, prevents tailgating, slipping in behind someone.
Locks, mechanical, electronic, delay controls, vulnerabilities, biometrics.
Locks are primarily delay devices. Keypads, vulnerable to shoulder surfing. Combination locks to guessing brute force. Biometrics, fingerprint, iris, offer high assurance but have accuracy issues, cost, and privacy concerns. Different types. Key. Combo, magnetic stripe cards, proximity cards like RFID badges, biometrics.
Card access versus biometrics. Pros and cons, combining them.
Cards are cheaper, easier to manage, but easily lost, stolen, shared. Biometrics are harder to fake, but more expensive, intrusive, can have false rejection acceptance issues. Combining them card plus PIN or card plus fingerprint provides stronger multi-factor authentication.
Alarms, lots of types. Contact, motion, PIR, ultrasonic, microwave, shock. Glass break.
Different sensors for different events, contact for opening doors, windows, various motion detectors using different technologies, infrared, sound waves, microwaves, shock sensors for impacts. Glass break detectors listen for the specific sound frequency of breaking glass. Choosing the right mix depends on the environment and risks.
Wow. We have covered a ton of ground today, from high-level architecture principles all the way down to, well, door locks and encryption algorithms.
We really have. And I think the main thing to take away, hopefully, is how interconnected it all is.
Right. It's not just one thing.
Exactly. Security architecture informs your crypto choices. Physical security protects your servers running the crypto. Threat models influence your controls.
Yeah.
A weakness anywhere can create problems everywhere. It's about building that layered, comprehensive defense.
So, for everyone listening, maybe the final thought is to consider that balance in your own context, the foundational principles versus the constantly changing threats.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe ask yourself, what single, maybe small-seeming security step, 2FA, better passwords, patching regularly, even just locking your screen when you walk away, what one thing, if you did it consistently, could make the biggest positive difference? Something to think about.
Good question to ponder.
Well, thanks for joining us on this deep dive. We'll see you next time.